Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 22nd of August. Representative Todd Akin of Missouri has decided to remain in the Missouri Senate race against Claire McCaskill. Yesterday, in an interview on Mike Huckabee's radio program, he accused his critics of overreaction to his use of the phrase legitimate rape and how women's bodies could block an unwanted pregnancy. He said yesterday, "I believe the defense of the unborn and a deep respect for life, which underlie all America, those are important parts of who we are, and they're not things to run away from." We have played the remarks that caused the fury and have called for him. Many people have called for him to get out of the race. Many prominent Republicans have done so. This, for the moment at least, puts the issue of abortion and rape at the center of the 2012 campaign. And we will be looking at this from a political perspective. We will also, a little bit later in the show, be looking at this from an anti-sexual assault perspective with guests who are members of the National Leadership Council of the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, and we'll also speak with the director of the Rape Crisis Center in Madison. We start our conversation with Adam Allington, who's a reporter for St. Louis Public Radio, about how this is being covered and the political implications of all of this. Welcoming your phone calls, as we always do. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, and you can always leave messages on our Facebook page, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Adam, thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning.
Tell me about the pressure that was on. How many phone calls did Representative Akin receive, do you think, in the last few days saying get out of the race?
I would say he's gotten a call from pretty much every top Republican in the state of Missouri, as well as from Mitt Romney and vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan. Everyone has asked him to drop out at this point. It's safe to say.
And why have they done that? Why have they called?
They're applying so much pressure because going into this race, the Republican Party has viewed the Missouri Senate seat as their best chance to recapture a majority in the Senate. It's been a critical part of their campaign this year, and they feel at this point that they have to go above and beyond to try to get back on solid ground in Missouri, and they just can't do that with Todd Akin as their candidate.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine, would you agree that at least for the moment, and I wonder how long this plays out, and it will obviously go into next week with a convention, but it does put this issue of abortion, rape front and center, and the Republicans probably want the economy front and center, don't they?
That's been the issue that Republicans here in Missouri have been trying to figure out. They want to keep this race about the economy, about differences between Republican positions and Claire McCaskill and so-called Obamacare, as Republicans would say. And this whole sidetrack onto these quotes about legitimate rape, they feel have really just thrown a sand in the gears of their operation. They don't want to be talking about this at all. In fact, Democrats, as we speak, are trying to link Todd Akin to Congressman Paul Ryan. They both co-sponsored legislation, the so-called personhood bill, that would introduce language around forcible rape into prior legislation in order to limit federal funding on abortions for rape victims. So the Democrats are very interested in tying Todd Akin or hanging Todd Akin around the neck of Republicans.
Has Todd Akin been outspoken on this issue in his years as a congressman when you've been covering him? Does he talk about it a lot?
I would say that Todd Akin is a classic he could be called a right of right conservative, a Tea Party conservative, if you will. He has been known to take positions that are to the right end of the Republican spectrum. He's a six-term congressman. He was elected to Congress in 2000. Yeah, and since then he has built his he hasn't shied away from these tough social issue questions. You know, even before this scandal sort of hit the national news earlier in the week, he'd taken some heat for comments he's made about federal subsidies for food stamps and school lunch programs and student loans. And even those comments were not popular by many people in his party who again, want to really keep the race about the economy. But no, Todd Akin has never really shied away from expressing his opinions on these hot-button conservative issues.
Mm. And tell me the background here of Senator Claire McCaskill, the incumbent, the Democrat, who put some money into running ads supporting him because she would prefer to run against him, thinking that she stood a better chance against him. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. There's been an odd bit of political calculus happening on the part of Missouri Democrats. Akin was the candidate they wanted to run against well before his remarks about rape and abortion. Republicans, for their part, have been they've been upset. You know, they say Democrats have had their thumb on the scales of the Senate primaries. You know, McCaskill ran these series of ads basically burnishing Todd Akin's conservative credentials. In the end, they said Todd Akin, too conservative for Missouri, but it had the side effect of saying for a lot of Missouri voters, hey, here's Todd Akin. He's this dedicated conservative. And so that rubbed a lot of Republicans the wrong way. And now at this point, Senator McCaskill's really gone out of her way to defend Todd Akin's right to run in the campaign. So Democrats definitely want Todd Akin as their candidate.
How are people in Missouri responding to all of this?
I think a lot of people in Missouri are just surprised that this is happening. Todd Akin is a known quantity in that he's a social conservative. He is a Tea Party conservative, but a lot of people thought he would be a little more disciplined in his campaign, and that he would be able to sort of keep the focus on the economy, and that, you know, he's not a political novice, so it struck many people. And he was considered the favorite to win that seat in the Senate. So it's really surprised a lot of people that his campaign has sort of gone off the rails, if you will, so quickly over an interview that was, in many cases, not a really hardball-type interview. It was the question that he responded to was a fairly basic question about his position on rape, and the comments that he made weren't, you know, they just came out of him. They came, you know, from him. So there wasn't any kind of, bait and switch, if you will, by the media on this issue. It's a self-inflicted wound.
Mm. How did it become such a huge story, Adam?
Well, it all started, it was actually a pre-recorded interview on a talk show, a local talk show called The Jayco Report, which airs on our local Fox affiliate. And the journalist Charles Jayco was, you know, doing a fairly standard interview on positions that candidate Akin had. And, you know, toward the end of the interview, he asked him a question about his stance on abortions, and particularly those caused by cases of rape. And so that's when the whole thing broke, and that broke on Sunday, and then, you know, it just exploded. And by Monday, it was a full-fledged scandal, and the calls from, you know, our top Missouri Republicans asking Akin to resign, Mitt Romney asking Akin to step down. And so it's just gone on from there. And he's now said he still plans to continue the campaign.
Mm-hmm. If you were a betting man and being a reporter and knowing about his past, would you have bet that he would have resigned yesterday, or would you bet that he would not resign?
But, you know, it's hard to say what's inside the Akin campaign or how candidate Akin is feeling. He can't feel very good at this point. Several of the funding organizations Republicans use in these races have been, you know, they've pulled funding. Karl Rove's Crossroads GPS has pulled about $5 million in advertising support that was supposed to start kicking in this week. So the question now is really, you know, how can he even wage a campaign, you know, with, essentially no money? And, you know, he's a man of his convictions, that I know. And so in that sense, I'm not surprised that he feels he still has a right to run this race. He stands on by his issues. He's apologized for his use of the word legitimate rape, or the term legitimate rape, but he still feels that his positions stand and will garner support among voters. So that's where we're at.
Mm-hmm. And should he resign next week or a couple weeks from now, do Republicans have a plan for that possibility?
That is a bit of an open question. He sort of missed the first deadline to drop out, where he could have simply written himself off the ticket. If he steps down now, it would take a court order to strike him from the ballot, and that deadline is September 25th. And then at that point, the GOP State Central Committee can choose a replacement for him. There are some names being batted around, some names from the primary, as well as some of our representatives and our former state auditor and so forth. So there are names being batted around, but at this point, it's anyone's guess who would be the person they would nominate should Akin step down.
Adam Allington is our guest, the first part of the show, reporter for St. Louis Public Radio, and we're talking about how this story has become front and center for some day now, and we'll ask him about next week's nominating convention, too, which does call for a constitutional amendment outlawing abortion with no explicit exceptions for cases of rape or incest. How will Republicans deal with that? And we're welcoming phone calls from you. Our number is 800-486-8655. George in Ellison Bay is our first caller. Hi, George. George, are you there? George was evidently going to ask, and I didn't see this, but we heard during the news that this morning, and perhaps this was on the Today Show, Representative Akin was calling Claire McCaskill pro-abortion.
I believe that could have been on a Good Morning America. He's at this point, he's really made his, he's trying to draw distinctions between himself and Claire McCaskill, saying Claire McCaskill voted for Obamacare. Claire McCaskill's pro-abortion or pro-choice, and he's trying to shift the focus, if you will, away from his comments and back to the fact that he's quite different from Claire McCaskill on many of these issues.
Yeah. You wonder, though, how somebody could come up with the comments that he came up with, which clearly are so wrong. I mean, what he was saying was scientifically incorrect. The phrase that he used showed that he was completely out of touch with people who suffer the horrors of rape. You can't say rape and legitimate in the same phrase. How in the world could he be so out of touch on this issue?
I can't speculate on where Congressman Akin gets his information or how he understands this issue. I can say he has apologized, over the past several days, multiple times on national outlets for using the term legitimate rape. He said he meant to use the word forcible rape. Obviously, a lot of people are still upset that he's drawing distinctions between kinds of rape.
Right.
But then the issue of this kind of biological defense that a woman may have if she's being raped from then conceiving, he's said again that he was misinformed, that he had bad information. Clearly, not a position someone like him on the Science and Technology Committee wants to be in, not being aware of basic biological facts. But I can't say where he gets his information.
George in Ellison Bay, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, George. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I heard the interview this morning on ABC with the congressman, and he used the word when talking about McCaskill, he called her pro-abortion. Now, I'm as much opposed to abortion as anybody else. But the fact is, pro-choice is not the same as pro-abortion. And I'd just like to have your guest comment on that.
That's correct. Claire McCaskill does believe, you know, abortions should be legal. I'm quite sure if you asked her if she were pro-abortion, she would say no. But as far as the Republicans are concerned and candidate Aiken is concerned, he's very direct on the fact that he thinks all abortions should be illegal, except, you know, in certain cases when the woman's life is in danger. He's, you know, he's not backing away from the fact that he feels abortion should be illegal across the board, and Claire McCaskill doesn't agree with him on that point. Presidential candidate Mitt Romney doesn't agree with Todd Aiken on that point.
So how does the Republican convention deal with that at their nominating convention? They have a call for this constitutional amendment outlawing abortion, just outlawing abortion. Will they just try to skirt that issue? Will they delete it from the amendment from their platform? Because you've got their presidential candidate not fully agreeing with that, and now you've got this huge controversy. It doesn't behoove them to continue to make this issue front and center, does it?
No, I think the Democrats are definitely trying to make some hay from this issue, trying to link Todd Aiken's views as being part and parcel to the Republican platform. And it doesn't, I guess if they're trying to downplay that, it doesn't help that their plank on abortion at this point is that all abortions should be illegal. Candidate Romney says he does support he would support abortion in cases of rape, you know, and it is a question of how much these positions at the convention really matter in terms of the campaigns themselves. I think it was Bob Dole who sort of, you know, famously said he had to check what those positions were after the campaign or after the convention. But it's clear that Democrats are going to try to, you know, keep hammering away at this issue and trying to make it about these social issues. And that is liable to hurt some Republicans in these suburban, you know, districts, these close races where, you know, there's, you know, close to a 50-50 split.
Peter in Stoughton, hi.
Good morning. Just two observations. First of all, you have Aiken's saying repeatedly that he just misused a couple words or just used the wrong words. He, as you were saying earlier, he doesn't seem to have a notion that what he said represents a whole bunch of ideas and complete misunderstandings or blindness that, as I'm trying to say, he doesn't realize the extent of what he did say with just those few words. The other thing that I see is he continues, even in his apologies, to refer to himself as we. He won't come out and say I. He won't say I apologize. He won't say I made a mistake. It's always we, and I don't know if that bothers other people as much as it does me, but he won't take responsibility for anything here. It's all seems to be somebody else's fault. It's never him.
Adam,
I can't. I can't speculate on the, you know, the full intent or calculation, if you will, behind Todd Aiken's apologies, other than to clearly say that, you know, he is trying to put the issue behind him at this point. He's said over and again that, you know, this was a simple mistake. It was a word choice mistake. I'm sorry. He's said that the issue that he understands the hurt that his comments caused, but he doesn't view this as a career ender, if you will. He stands by his overall positions and feels like this is an isolated case of using the wrong words.
Well, it would be hard to see this as not being a career ender if you have all of the major Republicans calling you and saying, get out of the race and we're not giving you any money.
It's difficult to speculate. There has been a lot of support for Congressman Aiken, who, you know, people feel like he just screwed up. He just used the wrong word in a moment. And then, you know, a lot of people still feel that, you know, agree with his overall positions, you know, may not be happy about, you know, what he said about, you know, about the issues, the issue of rape, but still would vote for him clearly if he is the candidate come November. So that is an issue. There has been a poll that was released yesterday that showed Todd Aiken still with a 1-point lead over Claire McCaskill, 45% to 44%. Although there is some speculation about the you know, whether that poll is on the up and up. It was a Democratic leaning polling organization called Public Policy Polling. And some speculate that the Democrats are again trying to sort of lay a trap, if you will, to keep Todd Aiken in the race because they clearly want to run against him in the November election.
Is this his issue? Is he a one-issue guy?
You know, he has been, as I've said, very out front on a lot of social issues about gay marriage, about abortion, obviously. He's also been a very strong supporter of funding for the military. He's on the Armed Services Committee, and, you know, a lot of his legislative accomplishments have been, you know, in the realm of funding for the military and, again, these social issues. But, you know, those are his main legislative focuses.
Mm-hmm. One more phone call for you. It's Dave in Menominee, Michigan. Hi.
Hi, thanks. Reince Priebus was on this weekend on one of the weekend shows, and he had brought up that, you know, this subject that we're talking about is part of the Republican platform, but it's not part of Governor Romney's platform. And they've also added the personhood amendment onto their platform while they're denying this publicly. You know, I don't think he misspoke. He said what they believe, and they just don't want people to hear what they're doing, the policies they're pushing. In public, it's one thing. Policies, it's another. I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Clearly, that's a good point. The Republican Party is trying to walk the edge. They're trying to appeal to their base, to these red meat Republican issues on issues like abortion. But at the same time, they're really trying to appeal to a swath of voters who are more concerned about issues like the economy, like health care. And so they're walking they're doing a little bit of a dance to try to bring all those people in. And it's clearly difficult for them. So, again, you know, these positions that are established during conventions, you know, I think are more designed to appeal to those hardcore Republican voters or the hardcore Democratic voters to really generate some enthusiasm with the base, but they may not be part of the visible platform, you know, on the campaign trail.
And finally, can he continues his race for the Senate, can he retain his congressional seat if he loses?
I believe he has foregone his seat to run for Senate, and there are other candidates now running in his district. So if he's not elected to Senate, he will not be the congressman in Missouri anymore.
Yeah. Well, Adam, it'll be interesting to see how long you're on this story, sir.
It's not likely to go away anytime soon.
I think you're right. Thanks so much for being with us.
Adam
Ollington, reporter for St. Louis Public Radio, and we are going to continue our conversation. We'll have two guests with us, an author, performer, and activist, who is a member of the National Leadership Council of the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. We'll also speak with the director of the Rape Crisis Center from Madison to talk about the seriousness of rape and some of the comments that Aiken made concerning, which are way off the mark here on how women's bodies could block unwanted pregnancies. So that's coming up. Stay with us. We'll continue taking your phone calls. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We continue our conversation with a focus on rape this hour or half hour of the program. We'll have two guests with us, and one is joining us in our studios in Milwaukee, Paul McComas. Paul is an interesting fellow. He's a writer, an educator, a public speaker, an editor, a filmmaker, a musician, and also an actor who's done monologues all over the country. He is on the National Leadership Council of the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. RAIN is the name of that organization, and he has a compelling story to tell about why he is doing this work of sexual assault awareness. And thank you very much, Paul, for joining us. We'll ask you to tell that story in a moment.
Thank you, Kathleen. You left out the most important qualification.
I'm sorry.
Milwaukee native.
Of course. And Milwaukee native,
there
Paul McComas. Hey, thanks for being with us. Kelly Anderson is also joining us, and Kelly is director of the Rape Crisis Center in Madison. Kelly, thank you so much for being with us. I understand you're at a conference in Chicago where this must be what everybody's talking about.
Absolutely. It is the topic of the day.
Yeah, I'm sure. Thank you very much for being with us. Let's start with your story, Paul, because it's one of the reasons that you've become an outspoken advocate for women who have been sexually abused. This conversation, Aiken's comments, have made us all turn to the seriousness of sexual assault.
It's the silver lining, isn't it?
Yeah, it is the silver lining. You are wearing a bracelet, and I'd like for you to tell us the story of why you're wearing that bracelet, because it's affected your life.
Sure, and I'm happy to tell that story. Let me just start by saying there's actually, for your listeners who can't see me, there are two of me sitting here. One is here as a representative of RAIN, and the other is a private citizen, and that's the one who'll be making more political statements. But why do I work for and with RAIN? Why do I wear this bracelet? It's because my first ever girlfriend here in Milwaukee, back in the 70s is when we were together, the mid to late 70s, and into the early 80s. We were still in relationship, but in the mid 80s, she was raped by a stranger in an alley one night in downtown Milwaukee, and 6 months later took her own life, stepped off the roof of the tallest building on the UWM campus. She was, you know, we'd like to use the politically correct term of rape survivor, but I can't use it for her because she was not a rape survivor. She was a rape victim, and the rapist, to my mind, is a de facto murderer as well. So really a lot of the activism, advocacy that I've done with and through RAIN, as well as a fair amount of the work I've done in my creative life, in my life as a writer and a performer, has been geared towards trying to right that wrong, trying to make up for the terrible loss of that 21-year-old life.
And how do you right that wrong?
You never can, but you must try. And my second published book, first novel, Unplugged, is the story of a rape survivor, someone in certain ways like my former girlfriend, who's able to overcome the obstacles, face down her demons, and start to heal and grow. And then the other way, other chief way, is through the variety of projects and initiatives I pursued with and through RAIN, which is the nation's largest anti-sexual violence organization. It's one of Worth Magazine's 100 top charities. It was founded 18 years ago last month by Scott Berkowitz, the president. And Tori Amos, the musician, was instrumental. Instrumentalist. She played a key role in its founding and continues to. They have some pretty interesting people involved. The group that I'm a member of, the National Leadership Council, is chaired by the actress Christina Ricci. So there are a number of people, women and men alike, different ages and backgrounds, who've been touched by this issue personally in their lives, either directly, rape survivors themselves, or indirectly, secondhand, like my situation.
Kelly, what was your response when you heard Aiken's comments?
Honestly, my response was oh, no, not this again.
Really? Not this again?
Because I hadn't heard that particular myth in probably 10 or 15 years. But certainly I think that just the depth of the misunderstanding that people have about sexual violence, how persistent some of those myths are and how hard they are to combat, it really felt like I was having a flashback. It's been a long road to try to help the public understand how pervasive this issue is.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think in some ways his attempt to apologize was even worse, because not only was there this, you know, comment about legitimate rape, which brings us back to who gets to decide what's a real rape, which women have been facing for, you know, centuries. But then, and the deep misunderstanding of biology, right? That somehow if women get pregnant from a rape, it's, you know, it can't really have been a rape because your body would have just shut down. But when he apologized and he said that he thought that those comments didn't, you know, clearly he misspoke and those comments didn't convey the depth of his empathy for the thousands of women who are raped and abused every year. And that was the part that I really choked on. Because according to the Centers for Disease Control, there's 1.27 million women raped a year.
Oh, my goodness.
So the fact that he has empathy for thousands of them just says he does not have a sense of the depth and the breadth of this issue. And then there's another several million who are abused. So the 1.27 million is rapes every year.
So
the idea that someone who makes policy decisions that affect women's lives is just that far off base. Is really tragic.
I agree with Kelly, and the word thousands, it actually refers more accurately to the number of those rapes that are going to end or lead to pregnancy, which he had thought was zero. You know, his so-called apology was actually very helpful. It clarified exactly how out of it this guy on the House Science Committee is. And, you know, I think it's part and parcel with the science that that neglects the evidence on global warming and that embraces creationism in the schools. This is what science and the science committee comes to when you've got people like Todd Akin on it.
Is this something, there has been a lot of press lately about whether or not this is a fringe issue. And when you look at the Republican platform next week calling for a ban on abortion, all abortion, no matter what, no matter what the circumstance. Two questions here, I guess, is it's become a somewhat, maybe not that particular view, but this idea that there should be no abortions, even in cases of rape or incest, mainstream for the Republican Party right now. Why is that, do you think?
Well, I would just clarify, actually, that I don't think it is mainstream. I think your caller had it right earlier, saying this is their platform, but it's not actually how most Republicans feel, and it's certainly not how most Americans feel.
Mm.
And every study shows that, that there's a tiny little fringe of people who would support outlawing all abortions in all situations. And I think that these comments actually really help indicate how much the Republicans are trying to craft this message that, we could have an exemption for, you know, pregnancy that results from rape, but since no pregnancies result from rape, we don't have to allow that, right?
Right.
Yep.
But yes, it's a very extreme position. And I think that the mindset that would say that it is an appropriate thing to do to force a rape victim to carry the rapist's pregnancy, that the government is now going to take control of her body in the same way that the rapist did, is just really not in keeping with American values.
I completely agree with Kelly. And you know, let's face it, Todd Akin is a pretty easy target. But I think if we move beyond just eviscerating him for his heinous remarks, we start to consider how pervasive his ideology has become within his party and a smattering of Blue Dog Democrats as well. One of your callers, as I was waiting to go on, was talking about Akin's use of we in his statements. I think it's accidentally apt and telling, because I think in some sense he is speaking for a wide swath, at least, of his party, and anti-choice people everywhere. And it's gone beyond anti-choice into anti-rape victim, anti-rape survivor. I find it very disingenuous of other Republicans to slam Akin for voicing what their party, through that platform plank, is about to support. You know, the plank language, and this is for a constitutional amendment in our country's constitution, is for the so-called human life amendment that the running mate of Mitt Romney signed on to and supports, and there are no exceptions listed. So if Mitt Romney truly disagrees with this in his latest iteration of himself on this issue, as on so many, maybe it's time for Mitt to grow a spine and say so, and say that plank will not stand as it is. It must have exceptions and amendments to it.
Well, and I think it's important to know that that plank is never going to get passed, right? I mean, that is them throwing a bone to their farthest right-wing constituency. Mm-hmm. And I think that part of what's happened is that this has been covered as a political issue. Like, what's the impact on the Senate? What's the impact on this race?
Yes.
And that's important, and I understand why. But I think that from a victim services perspective, what I see is, what's the impact on victims?
Yes.
When somebody with that much power in our political structure is talking about, well, legitimate rapes.
Right.
And I think people hit it on the head. I don't think he misspoke. I mean, maybe he didn't mean to say it out loud, but I really do think that that conveys the attitude of some rapes count. And I think when he said, well, I meant to say forcible rape.
As if that's any better.
I think that's what he meant.
As if that's any better. You know.
Right, those are legitimate,
right.
And the 80% of assaults that the 80% of rapists who know their victims, those don't count somehow. And
right.
We've worked so hard over the past 40 years of this movement. The first rape crisis centers in the country started in 1972, or were first incorporated in 1972, coming out of volunteers and grassroots movements of people addressing exactly this kind of just moronic misunderstanding of what the reality is of what women face.
And if she's right to distinguish between the two terms, legitimate rape is the Aiken term, forcible rape is the Paul Ryan term, and neither one is going to get you anywhere close to, policy that's going to help victims in any way, shape, or form. RAIN, you know, this organization that I'm serving, it has this three-pronged approach. They educate in order to prevent rapes and sexual assault and incest. They counsel the victims in order to help them become survivors and seek necessary treatment. And they also work towards prosecution and punishment of the perpetrators, and thereby prevention of additional rapes. And there's a significant advocacy arm to all of this, advocacy to legislators in the service of all three of the primary goals. I really appreciate the fact that they are bipartisan and that they have staunch allies on both sides of the divide. It has to be that way. It should be a bipartisan issue. But when you see Aiken saying the things that he's saying, and again, honestly, he reminds me, the reaction of the party reminds me of Claude Rains in Casablanca. I'm shocked to find gambling here. And then, sir, here are your winnings. They know exactly what's going on. And they're playing to a particular part of their crowd in order to get the vote out amongst people who feel exactly as Todd Aiken does. And he's framing not just abortion rights, but rape victimhood as a political issue. And, Kelly, should it be a political issue?
Well, and here in Wisconsin, we faced that in the fall when the state budget was facing lots of cuts,
mm-hmm.
and the Sexual Assault Victim Services funding, which is the only state funding that comes to programs that serve rape victims, was cut 40% from one year to the next. And there was a wonderful across-the-state outcry, and some of that the governor restored, and programs still took about a 28% cut. But I think they were really surprised to find that there was a constituency of women who recognize that one in four women will be sexually assaulted in her life, of men like Paul who care about women who have been assaulted or care about the fact that this could happen to their wife or daughter. And I think they were really quite surprised to find out that there is this, that this is an issue of concern and that this is about women's health and women's lives, because rape victims tend to be silenced.
Right.
You know, very few people, you know, go around wearing a button mm-hmm. or a T-shirt that says, I was raped. Ask me about my rape.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And part of recovering and healing is having that confidentiality and that privacy. And that's why services like the Rape Crisis Center focus so much on confidentiality.
Right.
But it also means that we don't have that kind of very public, you know, people don't show up, like breast cancer survivors show up for the race, you know, with their T-shirt that says, you know, I'm a survivor. Rape victims tend not to do that. Rape survivors tend to still keep that very private and very personal. And so it's a quiet constituency,
yeah.
I think.
And the stigma that Kelly describes very well here is the greatest ally of rapists who will hope that you don't go and report it to the police, right? And also the greatest ally of policymakers who, I would say, are committing a kind of a virtual or conceptual rape through policies that make it hard for victims to get the help and become survivors, and that actually make it easier for these rapes to keep on going. Now, the Speaker's Bureau of RAIN is populated, I'm not going to say largely, but to a significant degree, by rape survivors who have decided that they, mostly women, some men, are willing to step forward and claim this part of their history in order to use it to prevent others from ending up the same with the same kind of experience to have to handle. And I find that incredibly admirable and brave. Tori Amos herself, who was instrumental again in the founding of RAPE, she's a rape survivor, and she's not only spoken about it but written a song about it. And I'll say that was part of what brought me on board to this cause.
Let's go to phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our guests are Kelly Anderson, director of the Rape Crisis Center in Madison, Paul McComas, an author, performer, and activist, a member of the National Leadership Council, a Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, and our first caller is John in Eagle River. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Good. A few questions, or maybe a comment. It's interesting to me that there's 1.2 million supposed rape victims. Are those reported victims, and what's the estimate of non-reported victims? The other thing is, it seems to me that rape and incest go together. I think that incest is in some respects a lot worse. And how many pregnancies result from these events, the rape or the incest? If they have any figures on that, and what's the sampling that was done? How big a group did they sample to learn all that? And I guess if people in Missouri want Aiken, he's an ignoramus, and they can have him. But why are men deciding this? Groups of men like the Congress and the Senate, it's not an issue for men.
Excellent. Kelly, you want to start?
Oh, yeah, I'm actually going to use the answer to the first question to help with the second one, and I might defer to Paul on the third one about men, because that may be more politically savvy of me. But the question about reporting levels is absolutely on target. And depending on your source, the 1.27 million number that the CDC uses is all rapes, not reported rapes. And the FBI, as part of their collecting of data, collect information every year. And according to the FBI, they say that about 40% of sexual assaults are reported to law enforcement. So they say 60% are not reported and 40% are reported. And there's some issues with the methodology there. If you imagine somebody calling you up and saying, were you or anyone in your household raped this year? And if so, was it reported? First of all, people may very well not answer that truthfully, and may not want to tell a stranger they were raped. And secondly, you may not know that your daughter or someone else in your household was sexually assaulted.
So, if anything, it's probably a conservative figure, isn't it, Kelly?
Right. So, 40% is what is the most optimistic number. So, people who work in the field, based on the people that we work with and serve, and what we see from reporting rates, we say it's closer to 10 to 20% report to law enforcement. So 80 to 90% never get reported to law enforcement, which brings us back to the next question about, so then how would we track the pregnancies resulting from that if we don't know, which women are survivors or victims of sexual violence in any given year, because they're not necessarily engaging with services. And that's part of why it's so tragic when someone prominent says something like this about legitimate rape and about, just ignorance, because what we see with victims is a lot of doubt and a lot of self-blame and a lot of concern about seeking help because of the fears of being judged, and whether or not what happened to you really counts as a rape, because it wasn't a stranger who jumped out of a dark alley at night, so it doesn't fit the kind of stereotype that we still have. And so anything that keeps victims from seeking services is, I think, just ultimately unsafe for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
And then the question about linking incest and rape, what we know is that perpetrators perpetrate. They're looking for victims who are vulnerable. And so even here in Wisconsin, it wasn't that long ago that we had in the Madison area the mall rapist. And he was assaulting women, strangers, in parking lots. And then he stopped. And years later, this was James Perry, he was caught because he was producing child porn and abusing children in his basement.
Ugh.
So he had switched from adult women stranger targets to child victims who were known to him.
Good God.
Mm. So he wasn't, you know, he was still a perpetrator, right? He was just picking different victims.
Mm.
So I think incest or sexual abuse of children and sexual violence against adult women and adult men are very closely linked because the perpetration patterns are very similar.
Kelly, I'm glad that in your answer you come back to this notion of you know, the fear that keeps some victims from coming forward about what has been done to them. And it ties into the whole notion of a developing policy I see placing the onus on the victim in the same way that, you know, a criminal defense attorney might re-victimize a victim in court. Well, when you see a party plank moving towards denying abortions, even in the case of rape, incest, and amazingly, health of the mother, what they're saying, and what I think Aiken was really saying was, well, you can't necessarily tell whether it was really a rape or not, just as doctors tell me that you can't necessarily tell if this is really a situation where the woman's life is at stake. And so he's erring on the side of protecting the fetus rather than erring on the side of protecting the full-grown woman or the girl, who is clearly not just a developing human being, but a human being with a life, a personality, a history, and right now, a great deal of pain.
More phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to Todd in Eau Claire next. Hi, Todd.
Hi. I was calling to find out, or to actually talk a little bit about what happened to me. I was in the military about 20 years ago, and a sergeant of mine took advantage of me with alcohol and drugs. Sorry, it's really hard to say.
Hmm.
And basically sexually assaulted me, and he went to prison, and I had to go through courts and all that. And I just wanted to let people know that although they are post-sexual assault as far as men and women, the way men deal with it is, I wouldn't want to say considerably different just because of the stereotypes of homosexuality and things like that, that I had to deal with a lot as far as going through the court and stuff. And then I guess the last thing I wanted to say was I don't understand how you could label anything as forcible rape versus non-forcible, because it's basically, to me, all forcible, no matter how it's packaged or how it is done on to you. So I thought that to be kind of appalling to hear that from, especially someone of your stature. So,
Paul.
Yeah, I want to agree with the caller. Forcible rape is a redundancy. It's like terminal murder. There's no other kind of rape except a forcible rape. And I also want to thank the caller for his courage in coming forward like that. The previous caller made a false statement in support of a true statement. The true statement was that it's inappropriate for all of these men to be making decisions about an issue that primarily impacts women and girls. But then he went on to say it's not really a men's issue. And as our caller illustrates, actually, in many cases it is. Most victims of rape, abuse, and incest are women and girls, but a very large number are men and boys. Right,
and
Kelly?
The hard part about it is not actually the actual act of the rape or the sexual assault. It's the dealing with the after effects. Is,
mm-hmm.
To me, was actually worse.
Yeah.
Because the act of it, I was basically unaware of,
mm-hmm.
For the most part. You know, I mean, I knew what was going on, but didn't really have a lot to control it as far as being inebriated. So,
yeah.
But the after effects, you can control it or try to, and it's very difficult when even your coworkers blame you for what happened. So,
Did you have a place that you could go? Did you have somebody who could help counsel you through this, Todd?
That happened 20 years ago, and I'm finally starting to get it about a year ago.
Wow.
So.
Kelly.
Well, And I really want to thank you for calling, because I think you're bringing up a point that we maybe didn't focus on enough, because this was linking abortion and rape. So we were talking a lot about women, and I think that's what the previous caller was saying shouldn't have been decided by men, not rape, but abortion access.
Yeah.
But I think that you absolutely hit it. When we talk about the reporting levels for women and even assault levels for women, what we have much less idea about is what the prevalence is of sexual violence against adult men, because they are even less likely to report or to seek help than are women. And in your case is exactly on target, which is that even when adult men are the victims, the perpetrators are predominantly male. So it's typically male-on-male violence, and it's typically not, you know, gay sex. It's typically power. It's power and control in exactly the same way that it is when men rape women. And I want to make sure that we say that at the Rape Crisis Center in Madison and at all of the programs that I know about, services are available for men and boys as well as women and girls.
Mm. Terrific.
And I don't know that men necessarily think to pick up the phone and call the Rape Crisis Center. And following up on what Paul said, I do want to make sure we get in the phone number for RAIN.
Yes.
Yes, go
thank
ahead.
You. It's
800-656-HOPE. And just to clarify a little bit, when you call that number, RAIN doesn't provide the services. They connect you with the Rape Crisis Center closest to you who participates in the RAIN hotline. So if
all
you
right.
call from Madison, you would get the Madison Rape Crisis Center.
You beat me
all
to
right.
it, Kelly.
Thank
but
you.
Yes, it's the phone number, 800-656-HOPE, and also online, RAIN with two N's, RAINN.org.
And thank you both very much. We'll put those on our Facebook page in case you missed them saying this. That's a Kathleen Dunn Show. Our thanks to Paul McComas and Kelly Anderson for being with us, and thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Brett Jaspers for producing this show. We'll be with you tomorrow.